Today's program is brought to you by Q Drinks, carbonated mixers made for your cocktail. Visit their website at qdrinks.com. That's Q, the letter, drinks.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy.
Welcome back.
I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
What's up, Souther?
Not much, Damon. How are you?
I'm doing all right, man.
How's your week been?
It was a cold, rainy weekend, man.
Yeah, it was
windy, but it's sunny today, and that's really good.
Sunny day in Brooklyn.
It's like I felt like not doing a damn thing, man.
And yeah, it's that type of weather that like sits on you. It just makes you want to like lay around, be lazy, gray out.
The chartreuse thing got kind of postponed on Monday, right?
No, what a bummer.
Or was that last night?
It was supposed to be last night. Yeah. Right. It's going to be next Tuesday now in the park. Chartreuse hot chocolate with Tim Master and an ice carving demo and a bunch of bars showing up making different chartreuse hot chocolates, including myself.
I was
myself.
Really looking forward to that, man.
Chartreuse marshmallows that I made that now that I have to eat because they won't last till then, and then I'll have to make new ones.
Are you going to use them at the bar tonight?
We don't do that stuff at my bar. Come on.
Come on. Why not?
No. I'll pass them out to people.
Too much sugar?
Too much sugar.
Oh, I got you.
No sugar at the
Not
bar.
Not bitter enough.
This kind of weather makes you want to sleep in until, like, I don't know, 7.
7 p.m. or 7 a.m.?
7 a.m.
I know our guest today got up really early.
Yeah, she gets up at 7 every day. Probably earlier.
Why don't you introduce our friends?
Yeah, well, we've got two friends in the studio today, Nama and Asaf Tamir from Lighthouse Brooklyn, as well as Lighthouse Outpost in Manhattan.
That's right.
Yeah,
welcome,
hello,
guys.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Yeah, I mean, good to have you here.
So I've been hanging around you and your space since it was being built at Lighthouse Brooklyn, anyway. I haven't been to the Outpost yet, which has been open for about 5 months. You're doing breakfast and lunch over there. But I lived on South First, right behind your Lighthouse.
Yes.
When I was at Rye in Williamsburg, and you guys were building. And that place has been open how many years now?
Six.
6 years.
6 years.
Wow.
Amazing. That's amazing.
Such a cool location, too. It's like a mini like Flatiron building.
Yeah.
yeah, that long triangle.
Wedge. Yeah.
Cool.
We used to live across the street, and then my brother says that I sent him an article about Alzheimer's and how you're supposed to take a different route to your home every day to kind of like get your brain working, and then so he took a different route coming back from work one night, and he found Lighthouse. He found the space.
He stumbled on the sign and called right away and said, well, I'm interested in checking it out. And called Nama right after. He's like, want to see a space tomorrow? He's like, yeah, sure. I just come downstairs.
We lived across the street.
Were you looking at that time, or you took a different route home and decided I'm going to get into the restaurant bar business?
No, we were looking for a space. We're actually looking at a space in the West Village to do our initial concept, which also was called Lighthouse, which was kind of like Lighthouse, but 24 hours of healthy, fast kind of food that tastes good. And then that didn't work out, and at the same time, my sister sent me just an article about Alzheimer and taking different routes to walk home. And I was like, well, why don't you just take a different route and go home?
Pays to stay educated.
Yeah. Yeah, breaking patterns.
Right?
That's what I'm all about.
Break that pattern. Well, you just mentioned that maybe the original concept was going to be in the West Village, and it was going to be 24 hours of fast, healthy, you said, food. So talk about what Lighthouse is.
Well, the slightly longer answer is that it's more a philosophy-driven restaurant than an actual cuisine. We really wanted to feed people food that was good for them, that was healthy and delicious. And we wanted to change the paradigm of what it means to be a restaurant in an urban environment, be a part of a good system. You know, the way we see it, the food systems and the waste systems are a little bit broken, and we were using Lighthouse kind of like as a place to reinvent it, to change it.
Right. I remember when you were coming into Rye, you would talk about how, what the, you know, you're still build out, but you were talking about what the menu is going to be, and you would say, I'm making food that my brother and I like.
Right.
We're just making food that we like.
Yeah. Right.
And that you can eat every day, and even more than once a day, and never feel bad about it. Like, you know, you don't have to compensate the day after or the morning after. You don't feel bloated or unhealthy or I shouldn't have eaten that. You can always eat everything there and feel good about it.
Right.
Dinner starts now and it ends the next morning when you wake up. You know, it's there's a part of dinner that's like nourishing. And sure. So, you know, you're essentially building your body. And so I think there's a sort of like a respect that goes into it. And it's from sourcing it from, like, you know, taking the time to get to know the farmers and the people who grow the meat and the, you know, kind of like really sourcing everything properly, to treating our cooks really well. You know, we want food to be cooked with love, just like the difference between an animal that grows in a factory and it's, you know, sick and miserable and full of antibiotics or whatever it is, versus an animal that is out in the pasture and is eating well. And then we think it carries to the cook. So the kitchen is really open and everyone can like see the cooks cooking and they can see people enjoying it. And it's about this wholesome environment that nourishes love and warmth and like what to us food is all about. It's like what your mother used to do for you. You know, it's, there's so much beauty into it. And so we wanted to convey that in the space, in the food.
Absolutely. I think you do a great job of it, too, by the way. I've been there many times, and I feel that. I can see what's going on in the kitchen. They can see me. Yeah. Like you said, they get to see me enjoying the food.
Right.
I was a chef for 12 years, and I stood behind, you know, double doors. I never saw a whole lot of that at all.
Right. They get to be proud, you know.
Exactly. Right. And instill some pride. That's what drew me to the front of the house. I get to see and be a part of the experience.
Same as the servers and the bartenders. They're all a part of it. And, and they get to be proud of what they're serving and what they're eating at the restaurant. They get to eat from the menu, and I think they enjoy it too. They come there on their days off and have a snack there too.
Yeah,
it's great. That's like, that's the real,
that's a testament. Yeah exactly. Yeah. That's a beautiful space too. Again, it's got that kind of flat iron shape, big windows down one side that are open in the, when weather permits, and it's bright and airy
and open. And like, I love the idea of no walls.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Like, just like it's great, man. Everyone's in the room together. It's, and what's cool about it being like a triangular, like wedge shape, is that, you know, we think about like our cities, a lot of cities, like being like the streets are on a grid, and it's just kind of like, you're just, it's boxy and you're kind of like looking this way or that way. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, in that room, it's just kind of like you get to see everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you sit at the end of the bar, you're kind of at the point of a triangle, and you can kind of, it's a catbird seat. You can look down and see the whole, you can see the whole thing. And what got you guys started? Like, where I know you had some affiliation with Employees Only.
Correct.
And then is that where your trail begins, or is that just kind of getting into it?
My trail begins at the age of 15 at Café Apropos in my parents' old town in Rehovot, where I worked as a dishwasher prep cook. Then I worked a little as a bartender at a local pub called Psycho.
Psycho. Psycho Pub.
It's very well named.
Let's go get a quiet drink over at Psycho.
And then I went to the military for a little bit, then worked in a bunch of cafes and bars in Tel Aviv, some clubs. After a two-year trip to Australia, where I worked in so many different things. And my sister, I think once she finished her military service, joined
me. Is where you're from, military is its requirement, yeah?
Yeah, it's mandatory.
I feel like it should be that way here, too.
We're Israelis.
We'd probably be a lot healthier here, if it were true.
It's mandatory there.
Right.
Whether you want to or not, you go. And then we...
some walk right into
food's
it.
Food's not that great,
some
though.
Go kicking and screaming.
Yeah, I'll pass next time. Comes around in my karmatic cycles. And then we worked for some... I think it was... catering for weddings. We did some Eran and Yariv, right? We did bartending there. We did shots and test tubes.
It was the 90s.
it definitely were the 90s. I worked for some club companies, and I think in the year 2000, early year 2000, I came here to visit Nama, as I was called back for another tour in the military, and decided to stay here in New York. Nama was already here a few months, and quickly, as freshly off the boat immigrants or off the plane, we found ourselves in the service industry. like very quickly, I think. It's the third day here. I started working at a Blue Note.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Jazz.
Yeah. All that jazz.
I worked at the Fat Plat Pussycat. That was my first job.
Oh, man. So you guys were like right across. Are these?
They're close to each other. Yeah,
that's right.
Wow, you guys.
No, we were roommates too back then.
I love that you've always been so close. Being a twin, I really respect that.
Are you the evil twin?
My brother's my downstairs neighbor now.
Yeah, we still live in the same building.
That's awesome.
Are you still right across from White House?
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
That's great.
So how did you guys wind up at EO? That's the thing.
All right, that's funny.
You're foreign. That's the first step.
That's easy. Eastern European mutt kind of like bloodline.
Exactly. With good livers back then.
Yeah.
So how did it work out? I knew the contractor that helped them finish building Employees Only. Mm-hmm. I also worked the door at Bar 11 where Nama was a bartender and the hostess at Employees Only was a manager. We used to hang out at Schiller's where Akiva, the general manager at Employees Only, was a bartender, and Billy Duchan Gilroy,
the usual incestuous.
Yes, and we used to go to Pravda to see Dushan, Jay, and Henry, Igor from the park. So we kind of knew the people there, and I really wanted to get in there. Mm. So I went in for an interview, and they said, well, not really hiring bartenders. It's only owners that are bartending here. I was like, well, I'll do anything. I just am trying to get my foot in the door. And I said, I don't know, we'll call you. They didn't call me. I talked to my contractor friend who was from, is he from Macedonia or somewhere? Some giant Eastern European Balkan dude. And he called Akiva and said, put him to job. I go in the next day. He goes like, okay, we need a dishwasher, a busser, and the oven is broken. Can you fix that? I was like, can do. So I got in. I worked as a dishwasher, busser, prep, fixer-upper. And I used to sand the bar back then every Christmas. So it's nice and shiny. Helped them put some shelves up. And as soon as there was a open position for a bar back, Igor asked me, you want to jump in? I was like, yes. Yes, I want to do that.
That's their system there. You put in your time. You don't get to move up the ladder very quickly. But when you move up the ladder,
I'm familiar with that from my mandatory time in the IDF. So I was okay. So, it took me about a year and a half to get a bartender shift with Henry on a Sunday. And once I was in, I got my sister in there too.
Nice.
That was a smart move. And from then on, I think, then they were going to open Macau a few years later. And Billy, one of the owners, offered me a small partnership. And again, took mm-hmm. Nama, and we moved to Macau where I was a bar manager. She was the lounge manager.
Wow.
And all this time, by the way, we were thinking and working on our business plan for a lighthouse. That idea came before I even started Employees Only, when I was working at this bar called Luxus, strangely enough, in the West Village. And we thought that such a thing did not exist back then. Like when you finish your shift as a bartender, you usually get a pizza or you go to the Mexican diner and you get something. And you wake up and you're like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have had that. So like, that's what I thought.
Familiar feeling. Like,
when I had my second burrito.
You kind of regret it at the moment. You definitely regret it in the morning.
Yeah. So that's when the concept started sprouting about, like, what do I eat at the end of the shift when I'm walking home? I need somewhere that I can eat something that's going to make me feel better tomorrow. And we were looking at a few spaces. And time went by, and I was really happy with that company. That company really treated me, I think, and Emma too.
They're the best.
Very, very well. And that inspired the way we wanted to work with our staff. I've worked in a few shitty bars and a few shitty places where I was treated like
that. Haven't we all?
We all have.
So that was a good example of how it could be.
Sure.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I think it's mid-show, so let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. But then when we come back, we're going to start talking about the initiatives that you guys are taking on at Lighthouse that are reducing your impact on things like garbage and recycling and the ideas that you have on how to change that for all of us, which is really the reason we invited you here, because this is fascinating stuff.
Right on.
Right? So let's take a quick break and hear from our delicious sponsor.
Jordan Silber, founder and CEO of Q Drinks. We're proud to support the Speakeasy. At Q Drinks, we make spectacular carbonated mixers, crafted to mix with your favorite spirits. Based right here in Brooklyn, we're available nationally in 6 flavors, including Q Tonic Water for spectacular gin and tonics, and Q Ginger Beer for spectacular Moscow Mules. I started the company after a night in my backyard with good gin, really good friends, and lousy tonic water. I realized the world needed better mixers, so I made them. Q Drinks uses real ingredients, a lot less sugar, and a lot more carbonation. The result? Clean, crisp, spectacular beverages that bring out the best in your favorite spirits. Using Q Drinks, it's easy to create terrific drinks with just 2 pours. 1 to 2 ounces of your favorite spirit and 3 to 4 ounces of Q poured over ice in a highball glass. It's simple and spectacular. Q Drinks. Make your drink spectacular.
All right. We are back.
We are.
Yes. We're back. Spectacular.
All right. So
we brought some snacks, by the way.
Yes.
Great.
So are these some good, healthy snacks? You know, I understand your whole mentality when you talk about how you were working in this industry, which means you get out of work late, and then you are looking for some sustenance and nourishment for your own body.
God.
What the fuck is that?
House-made sourdough.
That's not a snack.
That's a whole,
the size
a whole
of
loaf of
Damon's
bread.
Head.
I know. I was going to say, I could wear that as a motorcycle helmet. A delicious helmet.
Some pickles.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. God. I love the pickles over there. The first time I came there, that's what I got. You guys had a pickle platter, and it was like choose your own adventure. There was like 10 different, and you could choose 5, and then I think I picked my 5, and then you brought me a plate that had them all anyway. And I loved you still do those jalapenos.
They're right there.
Yes.
And some tahini and smoked labneh.
Awesome.
Labneh is like yogurt, right?
But yeah. More tart and solid.
Oh, my God. We got to stop inviting bartenders.
And start inviting restaurateurs. Restaurateurs.
Oh.
These jalapenos, they're pickled with sesame oil, right? Well, they're finished with sesame
Your
oil.
Your memory is.
Correct.
Because they're so fucking good. That's why I remember. Sorry. Very excited. So we're just going to rip this fucking huge bread apart.
We also brought you some compost.
We don't have a knife.
For the garden upstairs or whatnot. Made from Lighthouse. Organic
That's
waste
awesome.
Left over.
That's adorable.
Uh-huh. You guys are, wow. Well, I think we should just wrap up the show and eat all this.
Yep, that's it for the show, everybody. We're going to be snacking on these things.
Do this one short.
Be sure to check out Creative Drunk Instagram. You'll see the photos of this delicious spread that
aftermath.
They just laid out. Well, I'm going to take a picture right now.
Yeah, do it.
So, yeah, let's talk about what you just said. You said you got some compost. And why do you have that? You guys are kind of leading the forefront on this sort of thing in the restaurant world, right?
Hoping to. I mean, we kind of came across, when we were opening Lighthouse, we came across a book that completely changed our view. It's called Cradle to Cradle, and it's basically a book about design and how good design can be groundbreaking. How from inception, when you think about creating something in the world, you can create something that's a part of a better system. And we looked at the food system and the waste system, and they just seemed very nonsensical to us. They seemed very broken. And we wanted to reinvent it. We wanted to figure out a way to do things better, to kind of like, I think it's called biomimicry. There's a beautiful model called Mother Nature, or an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And it's so precise, and it's, you know, works so well. And so we thought, how can we infuse that idea into restaurants? And that's, we've been sort of using Lighthouse and Outpost as our little test tube to kind of like check and build a new system. And it was harder than we imagined. You know, in the beginning, we were just kind of like separating very specific food waste for our neighbor that was using it to dye fabrics. So onion skins and avocado pits and skins and beet tops and carrot tops and stuff like that. And she would come and pick these like little buckets. And we thought, it's a drop in the bucket, but it's better than nothing.
Well, that's where it starts.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. It just felt good to kind of like be separating. And, you know, our cooks at the time were like, what are we doing over here? You know, but we were like, it's okay. It's going to make sense at the end. And then we started working with a Billion Oyster Project. And they are basically cleaning the New York Harbor by using oyster shells. So we we keep our oyster shells. They get cleaned by volunteers and children in school. It takes almost a year to get all the bacteria, mignonette sauce, whatever it is that you put on it, to really, really clean the shell. And they spawn oyster larvae in optimal conditions and then reintroduce them to the shells to kind of like create a reef for that goes into the river. So that helps in times of storm. It kind of like helps with waves and such. And then each oyster can filter up to 50 gallons of water a day. So they're literally cleaning the water.
It's an incredible program. Grand Army's part of it, too.
Yeah. Oh, get out of here.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's incredible.
What's it called? Billion Oyster Project?
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, just want to say it again for the listener.
So they were kind of like our second second collaborator. And then we found the Cork Collective Upscale, and they pick our corks. And they upcycle them. Upcycling meaning you're turning something that is waste into something that is of value. So they use them for art. They use them to make buoys. And so we're just kind of like through these like small partnerships are constantly improving our impact on the environment. And, you know, we sort of like try to look at it as positive emissions rather than, you know, reduction.
The cork thing really bothers me, man.
Why is that?
Because, I mean, cork comes from a tree. It's like the bark of a tree. And it's you can't really... I mean, I know
literally
going to
tear
ways.
This giant
do it.
Helmet.
Yeah, do it.
We're going to break bread on air.
Well, cork is harvested. And so... Can you hear it?
But yeah, like you can't really recycle cork like for using in bottles. You can use it for other things, but you can't really like shred it down. You can, but... It doesn't often happen. So.
But it has. So cork has a negative CO2 deposit. Mm-hmm. So it actually keeps the CO2 in. And even when you recycle it, it still holds on to it. So it kind of like helps clean the air. And it's a biodegradable product. So if you put it back into the ground, it would just, you know, over time disintegrate versus metal and the synthetic ones, which have a, you know, they pollute.
Especially as using it in ocean buoys. They allow algae and stuff to grow on it. So they slowly, basically they become food to marine life. And they, again, they're much healthier than plastic buoys, which is what we have normally.
We became such hippies. When I listened to us talk,
kumbaya,
it's so weird.
Kumbaya.
But we think it's cool. I mean,
that wasn't your intent, but it is cool.
I mean, you know, sort of, so like, you know, Lighthouse is a very organic thing and kind of like a child or a plant. I think every year it grows and we have this like new realization. And in the past year, I thought, you know, like educating guests and educating, you know, if you want to change the world, change consumers. And we talk about kind of like the people that we buy from and the people that come to Lighthouse. You know, we're like voting with our money, right? Looking at the last election, like you get to do that potentially every day.
Yeah.
By choosing what you want to see in the world and kind of like picking your partners. And, you know, it's very empowering. It feels good to like know who, you know, that you bought this specific wine because they're doing things right, because they're about longevity, because they... You know, they're building a beautiful community around them. And we're trying to do the same thing for around us, and hopefully that will grow.
Right. Hopefully other folks will follow along your, you know, example. I remember even coming in. I mean, I've been there many times, but I remember even the very first time I was there, you were excited and proud to show me the napkins.
Right.
You're like... My mom sews these napkins for us.
Right.
And they're cute. They're like little gingham-y, crosshatchy pattern.
Right.
They're all different colors. I'm colorblind, but whatever, I could tell they're all different. Yeah. They're all different, right? They're not like...
Different shades of gray.
It's not like, yeah, pretty much. And you were like, we're going to make our own napkins, and we're going to launder our own napkins, and we're going to not have napkins to throw away.
Right.
And I was like, oh, that's great. But that, I feel like, was like step one when we look back now after 6 years, all the things you're doing. That's amazing. Like, I feel like your place is a solid 6 times bigger than Maury Margo, but when I listen to you, I feel like I bet they throw away less garbage than I do, right? I mean, I'm not sure about that, but, like, I feel like you guys really work hard to not throw anything away.
Right.
You know?
In a perfect world that we hope to, you know, we're working with a little bit with the UN. We spoke in the UN a couple of weeks ago about gender equality and food security.
You spoke at the UN?
Yes.
She did.
Yeah.
Man, the caliber of guests on the show just gets better and better.
Well, it's downhill from here.
Yeah. It's true.
Nathan, what's next?
We really are working on a bigger plan for, you know, waste management localization without garbage trucks. I mean, New York City in 1 year spends $300 million on exporting waste. We're paying other countries to take our waste because there are no facilities in New York City.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, there's like a long history of, you know, from like the 50s and the 30s when everything got privatized and everything changes. But basically, the city sanitation is using privatized
contractors, yes.
Yeah, to deal with waste.
To haul waste out of the city. And then to pay someone to take it, right?
Yes.
Exactly. And so we've sort of like looked at everything that's happening and we thought there has to be a better way to do it. And we're looking at a program where your waste gets picked up on schedule, so there's never waste on the street. And it's about material sorting, so you have a secondary value from everything that comes in.
You use smaller trucks, electric trucks maybe, yeah.
Yeah. The numbers make sense.
You were talking to me about this at a dinner that we were all at.
That's right.
Right?
We were eating lots of cheese.
We ate fondue. Yeah. It's not dinner. It's dip. It's not dinner. It's dip. You were saying you're trying to create a program that's localized to where you're at in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where you'll use smaller trucks. And you just mentioned possibly electric. Again, that scheduled pickup, meaning nothing's on the street.
Right.
And then someone then goes through your garbage effectively and pulls it apart into all its components.
No. The businesses would, you know, the businesses
still
would
separated.
Sort it out.
Yes.
Yeah. There would be different bins for everything and, you know, which seems like a lot in the beginning, but we've been doing that at Lighthouse for forever. And it's, you know, once you get used to a system.
Yeah. It just is what it is.
Exactly.
It's crazy thing about that $300 million. We just like started, if everyone pitched in and started doing it the right way, then you could probably use that money in paying for, you know,
Education,
minimum wage. Mm. Maybe we could probably eliminate the gratuity system.
Flying cars.
Yes. Wait. Playing cards.
I'm still pissed at that.
Dude, there is. I'll show you later. I found a flying car the other day. Someone posted something.
I was
about
promised
it.
Flying cars as a child. They're still not here.
The idea was to.
Elon Musk is working on it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
We wanted to work from within. It's easy to talk about it, but it's but it's not very effective when people that are not from within the industry. It's much easier to vote with your restaurant's money of who you're going to use to manage your waste, who is going to do that, where you're going to move it, and we came up with the idea that we have to do it from within. We have to open a restaurant or a bar or whatever, and change the way we do it in order to make a change. And the larger a number of participants in these experiments, the larger the impact will be. And, of course, we know a bunch of people from the industry, and we're going to slowly, gradually try to implement that with other people to just help them make a little booklet with all the contacts. Of course, it's a open source kind of thing because the idea is not for profit. Profit is maybe a result from it, or, you know, savings is maybe a result of this, but the idea is to have a larger impact. So, of course, it's an open source idea. So anyone who wants any of our contacts, any help in any way, can always get that from us, and we want to help other people do that.
Has anyone gotten on board yet, or have you started recruiting yet?
I mean, we do all the time, and we talk to restaurants, we talk to bar owners, we talk to liquor companies. You know, we may have found a partner in doing like sustainability workshop for restaurants and bartenders. I mean, it's a constant kind of like. You know, we really want to inspire rather than preach. And so I'd rather people sort of like think, oh, this is great. I want to take part and come to us rather than us kind of like annoying people. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a movement in that direction. People want to do the right thing. It feels good. You know, it feels good for everyone. I mean, our servers are, I call my cooks the little bokashi fairies because they, you know, when we do the compost, it's called a bokashi. And it's an airtight kind of compost where you have enzymes that are digesting it. So it doesn't really ever smell. And you have to kind of like sprinkle a little bit of that bokashi in the buckets and they kind of like walk around and they totally get it. You know, they're like really a part of it, even though it's a little bit more work. It's a little bit more annoying. But they're, you know, everyone's really behind it. It feels good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we separate our bottles and send some to our, let's say, beer distributors, and they take it back and sanitize the bottles, reuse them, rather than throwing it away to who knows where it's going. And some of the rest of the bottles that they can take are going to Sure We Can right here in Bushwick, and they separate it further and use it for recycling. So whatever I can't give back to our distributors, Sure We Can.
That's our compost.
And that's our compost company, too. They take our organic waste and turn it into compost in a facility. I guess it's really not so far from here.
Yeah.
It's right on Bushwick Avenue.
So where does that go off to? Like, the compost becomes what? It becomes mulch and fertilizer and things like that?
Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly.
But how does it get distributed from your place? These guys pick it up, and then they just, that's their end of it?
I mean, we sell it at the restaurant. We sell compost at the restaurant. We give it away. I use it for my plants. I just get it for my plants. They use it for their garden.
This plant could use some compost.
There we go. Some.
Just some right there.
It's looking pretty weak.
It's because that on-air light is like burning it to death.
Yeah.
Damon, you got to try some of these pickles.
I know. I can't wait. They're all the way over there, man.
Well, pass them over.
You can't see it, but...
Oh, my God.
Don't burn your mouth.
It's a great thing. They're not that hot. Like, it's a jalapeno, but it's not crazy spicy. It's real savory.
Yeah, I mean, I can smell the sesame oil from here, man. It's amazing. All right, well, dude, okay, so give us the website. Where can we find out more information about all the great things we've talked about today?
Also, are you baking this bread at Lighthouse?
We're baking this sourdough. We actually started making sourdough bagels, which are like the best thing you've ever had because they're so light. They're so airy.
Yeah.
And the crisp kind of exterior. And we bake challah. Challah.
Challah.
Gotcha.
I mean, it's not wheat. It is our incredible chef, Joey Scalabrino. He's amazing. So I'll tell a little story. Joey started working with us at Lighthouse. He was working with our first chef, Nicholas Cox, at La Esquina, and he was, I think, a busser at the time, and he realized he wanted to cook, and he came to Nick and said, hey, I think I want to learn how to cook. Can I get a job in the new spot? And Nick said, sure. And Joey started working with us, and he was checking oysters, and he was really adorable. He was like this 20-year-old kid. And after 2 years, he said, I think I need to go out into the world and learn more and experience and whatever. And we said, go. You'll always be our friend. And he did amazing. He went to All Good Things and worked with Ryan Tate, and he became a super young chef at Iris Cafe. And then when Nick decided he was moving to Boston and we were kind of like parted ways very amicably, we called on Joey, and he's been our chef since. And he's a very talented, very hardworking, really great baker.
Yeah.
26-year-old. Yeah.
Made from scratch. Like,
yeah.
Well, yeah, I was about to say, so it sounds like he's made from scratch.
He's made from scratch.
He did it himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Self-taught.
That's amazing. Yeah. This bread is delicious. I tore a big chunk of it off. You can see it on my Instagram. I already posted it. Creative Drunk.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
So fast.
At Creative Drunk.
Yeah.
It's beauty. Let's talk real fast about a couple of things. The Billion Oyster Project.
Yes.
Huge. If you're a restaurant out there and you're serving oysters, get on board.
Definitely.
Sure We Can.
Sure We Can.
Sure We Can.
Common Ground.
Sure We Can. Takes compost and bottles off your hands.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Common Ground. What's that one?
Common Ground is a compost facility that works in Manhattan. So this is our
outpost. That's your Manhattan connection for outpost.
Yeah.
And then how about you got websites and stuff for Lighthouse itself?
So lighthousebk.com and lighthouseoutpost.com.
Yeah, I follow Lighthouse BK on Instagram. Some beautiful photos of just delicious, healthy. Well, it's delicious more than anything. Just delicious food.
Yeah.
Right.
And beautifully prepared and presented.
Thank you.
Gosh, you guys are really like cutting edge. It makes me feel like I need to get off my ass. I'm embarrassed to say that literally just back in November, we finally started recycling bottles out of Maury Margo.
Yeah.
Which is over 90% of what we throw away. We don't really have any food or napkins. Mm-hmm. I don't use straws, like anything like that.
That's awesome.
If it makes you feel any better, I was working at an event yesterday at a giant pier, which I will not name, for a big event, which I will not name, making cocktails for a ton of people. And
Which
I cannot name. But we went through about 20 cases of spirit, which I cannot name. And this was just one bar in this giant facility with this huge event. 20 cases. Think about that. It was over 5 hours. 20 cases.
It's a lot.
And there were no recycling capabilities with this venue.
That's not good.
No. No, it's not. We're not thinking.
They don't think about that. They don't consider this kind of stuff.
And that's all it is.
That would be just a huge impact.
Yeah.
For a one-day event.
For a one-day thing. But like some of these big venues, they just don't consider it.
And I have to assume that for an event like that, I've worked a million of them. You're probably using plastic cups that get thrown away. You're probably using straws and everything. There's a napkin under each drink.
Well, I mean, you know, so if you ever read Cradle to Cradle, or you just think about that philosophy, then it's looking at design. So you can, you know, it's not about not making waste. It's about rethinking waste. It's about, you know, if we use the right materials, you know, there's and everything is biodegradable potentially, or either biodegradable, or, you know, they call it either the technical sphere or the biosphere. And so things can either be truly recycled, like pure metals and such, or biodegradable, where they just go back into the cycle. And so, you know, it's sort of like
eaten. Have you seen these things?
Yes.
Do you know what I'm talking about? In India, apparently, the number one consumer of plastic silverware, it's not silverware, it's plasticware, is India. But this company has started making it cheaper than the plastic stuff costs, out of cornstarch.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
And so you use the spoon to eat, and then you fucking eat the spoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's delicious.
And even if you don't, it's cornstarch. It'll degrade pretty quickly once it gets wet.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that's how tortilla chips came around.
With a spoon.
Ta-da!
For salsa.
Yeah, exactly.
So now they just got to make it delicious, right? Yeah. I think currently it's just like, it is edible. Well, this table's edible. But like,
you can eat pretty much.
Now they got to make it delicious.
Termites.
Light bulbs.
Might want to eat some mushrooms before you eat the table.
I want the chili infused spoon. Whatever. I don't know. I want a chili spoon to eat with my chili.
Yeah.
Yeah, but going back to that, it's what is the bottom line? Is the bottom line just about making money, or can you make the money and still do something good while you're at it? You know, while you're doing this thousands of people event, you can still do something.
Yeah. Multiple bottom lines, you know.
I mean, how hard would it have been for... I think this has given me ideas. I do events all the time, too. Now I'm going to say to the event people, like, hey, we're going to have a whole bunch of glass left over. Let's make sure that... what's it called again? Yes, you can?
Sure, we can.
Sure, we can. Let's make sure that a representative from Sure We Can is there taking it all away.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Like, they'll probably come and do it because they make money off of it. Whatever. There are plenty of ways to make sense.
Yeah, I mean, they basically have, you know, low-income families helping them. It's called the actual thing is called canning. So they, you know, that's how they make their living.
Yeah,
it's
the
like from the deposit. Mm-hmm. When you sort bottles and cans, they go from 5 cents to 8 cents. And so it actually, some people, like, for them, it's a livelihood.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah, people get their kids through college with that.
No, you guys are incredibly smart and ridiculously big-hearted.
Very thoughtful.
And thoughtful people who are less concerned with your own advancement and more concerned with the sort of sustainability of everyone's position. It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, we should all get behind you. Oh, look at you. Are you blushing? Look at how red she just got.
No, it's a red snapper.
All right, well, we're towards the end here. I'm just going to plug next week's show, which is a dear old friend of both of ours, Brian Miller. Of all of ours. You guys know Brian?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Brian's going to be on promoting... promoting himself because he's a pirate. I guess he wants to talk about the upcoming Tiki Monday, which will be apparently the last one, which sounds sad when you say it, but there's a reason behind it that he has yet to reveal. Maybe we'll squeeze it out of him next week.
He's opening.
I should hope so, right? That's the whisper. Okay.
What's a pirate's favorite letter?
R.
You think it's an R, but it's the C.
That's right. That's right. Yes, Damon loves puns. So anyway, next week, Brian Miller. And then stay tuned closely because immediately following the show, he will be headed right over to Grand Army with, I think, both Jelani and Corporal Captain are going to be joining him.
Right on
the team. Yeah, the team from Tiki Monday are all going to head over and do a happy hour at Grand Army.
It's going to get weird.
It's going to get shirtless and painted faces and gold teeth and whatnot.
Ooh. You better start drinking by then.
Pirates and swords.
I'll be drinking.
Yeah, you'll be back. Anyway, so again, thanks for joining us
on
the Speakeasy today, guys. Really great to have you. Really great to get some information
from you
that's forward thinking. And then, you know, just briefly, we can talk about this off air as well, but I'm the new president of the USBG New York City chapter. Right. We need to do an event where we get a bunch of restaurateurs and bar owners to sit down and hear what you guys have to say and present.
Love that.
All right, so we can get more people on board, and I'm going to do the same. And yeah.
Okay, man. Sounds great.
Yeah. Woo-hoo.
Dude, this has been great.
It has been a great show.
So fast.
Yeah. And I can't wait to get it. This sourdough is so freaking good.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for bringing all these snacks. We're going to dig into these after the show. I'm sure Jason over at the bar would like to have some.
Yeah, of course.
So, yeah, well, that's it for this week. Check out heritageradionetwork.org for many other programs like this. Till next week, I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Cheers.
We'll see you later, guys.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that sound. It's gonna get you some in the air.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.